realfaith.org.au.
I sat there and for the last time I was able to prophesy. And I said, Belinda, you're just about to slip out of your body and slip into the presence of Jesus. I said, I'm so sorry. I wish I'd been a better dad. I just had one moment, and how blessed am I that I had the opportunity to usher my own child from mortality into immortality, from life, not into death, but through death into eternal life.
Welcome to Real Faith, conversations about the impact faith has on our lives and the challenges we go through, helping us today and giving us hope for tomorrow. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
Well, joining us once again is David Schaefer. He's the author of the book, Grieve Upwards, One Man's Journey Through the Valley. And as we heard last time, unfortunately, he's gone through several seasons of grief. He didn't set out to become an expert on grief, but the grief kind of found him. Welcome back to the program, David Schaefer.
Thanks very much, Eric.
Glad to have you with us once again. And yeah, so nobody kind of wants grief to come their way, but grief has a way of finding us.
Grief has a way of finding us. That's true. We don't want it, but it happens. So what are we going to do with it? And when Marilyn, my first wife, passed away in 2003, I had to do something about that because despite any other grief that I've experienced before or after, this was the deepest of all experiences. Probably because marriage is not a contract. It's not like any other relationship. It's a covenant. It's a supernaturally breathed on relationship. And when it breaks, when it tears apart, the people that are living and left behind are the ones that are wondering, why am I bleeding so much, metaphorically? And so this time I had to do something about it. And I didn't know that learning about grief was so therapeutic. I didn't want to stay where I was. I felt like I had a call of God on my life and I wanted to finish the race well and strongly. And so I went to a large church in Sydney.
Well, before you get to that, tell us a little bit more about how it was affecting you physically, mentally, everything. What state was your mind in at that point?
Well, I think I was getting up at the crack of 11 every day.
Crack of 11.
I would drag myself down to the lounge room. I would open up my little workbook on grief. I would read a verse. I would try and pray. And then
how is that all working for you?
No. It's when you're gutted by grief, you don't have much energy to do anything with. And so I could be back in bed by 3 o'clock in the afternoon. That was in the first maybe 2 or 3 months. I'd visit the memorial gardens. I'd sit over there and just...
Because you had been married nearly 30 years.
Yeah.
She was your best friend?
She was my best friend. And we talked about everything. She was my confidant. She was the person that taught me so many things and vice versa. It was a wonderful sharing of life. And, you know, we really explored covenant and the closeness of that kind of relationship. So why wouldn't it hurt? Why wouldn't you feel like roadkill? Why wouldn't you feel like a bit of flotsam floating somewhere in the ocean?
And what might have made it even harder for you was you're in ministry at this time, and aren't pastors and ministers, aren't they all supposed to be experts on death and all that?
I always tell people that before I was a pastor, I was a person.
Well put.
And before I was a person, I was a fetus, and then I was a baby, and then I was adolescent, and I didn't know how to live in those years. And pursuing a call of God on your life doesn't make you any less a human being with every feature of what humanity experiences.
Did it surprise you how you were reacting?
Not really.
It didn't catch you by surprise, like, hey, I'm a pastor, I should know about this. I've done how many funerals?
No, not at all. I staffed my responsibilities by asking other people, a team of other people, to carry my responsibilities for a season. I unwisely gave myself 3 months, or was it 7 weeks? That's not 3 months. 2 to 3 months to get better. At the end of that time, I was still feeling so under the weather.
Unwisely? Why was that unwise?
Uneducatedly. That's not even a word. Ignorantly. I didn't know how long grief was going to
So you kind take. Of scheduled it for a season.
Yeah.
But now why was that unwise?
It was unwise. Well, it was unwise because I wasn't going to be better in 2 or 3 months. Grief takes its own course.
Mm.
And it takes as long as it takes for every individual. And I could not schedule my life after that.
You tried to schedule your grief, but you can't schedule grief.
Yeah, precisely. That's exactly right. And so I just had to go for the ride and work out how to live a little bit better all the time and go on the journey of back to health for me.
So initially you just started on your own trying to get over this thing or get through this thing. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah. And initially, I think everybody does that. We're just so lost in our grief and our experiences that I don't think you can expect very much of a person like that. But then when you realize at some point, when you realize you should be making some kind of progress, you think about it. And one of the things I thought about was maybe putting myself and my family through some kind of help course. And so I rang a large church in Sydney, and I thought if they were a large church, they'd have plenty of resources. And they talked about a course. They put me onto a psychologist, which talks about a course called Grief Share. And they said initially, no, you can't do that. You're deep in grief yourself. You couldn't run the course for somebody else. And then when I explained my ministry background and experience in helping other people, they begrudgingly let me buy it. And so every Monday night, my family had come around. By this time, I learned to make a baked dinner. And can I say that learning how to cook for me, which I didn't know very well, you know, barbecues and breakfast,
yeah,
pulled me up.
That's my specialty. Yeah.
But, you know, to avoid starving, I had to learn to cook.
Probably a good idea, yeah.
And so I'd cook a baked dinner. And those little baby steps, learning to do new things, even those things, was help because it was going forwards.
Mm.
It had that little feeling of I'm going forwards, albeit baby steps and slowly. And so my family would come around and I'd give them a baked dinner and normally apple crumble. to follow. Yeah, pretty good.
Wow, that was pretty good.
And then we'd watch the half-hour video on Grief Share, and then we'd all go home. And then every morning I'd get up and use the Grief Share book as a little study. And like I just mentioned, it was very brief and very shallow because that's all the energy I had.
Hmm. But it was something.
It was great. It anchored me to the rock that never moves every morning.
Well, we don't have time for you to tell us the whole course, but what are one or two of the main things that really helped you about that course?
The two big ones that helped me was, number one, it helped me understand grief. It put a reality or a realism about what I was experiencing. It didn't allow me to think super spiritually about it. It was real, and it had certain symptoms, and I had to learn these things. And every time I learned something more about grief, I felt like I was taking a little bit more charge of myself and my experience.
Because you had been kind of passive. Grief was pushing you around.
Yeah.
So now you were kind of taking control.
I was. And to be honest,
that's a helpful thing.
Very helpful. I don't think anybody ever really starts to grieve in a healthy way until they become intentional about it. But the second thing I did that was right was that I began to express it, like understanding grief and then expressing your grief. They're the two biggies going through grief. There are many other things that you can do as well. And for me, you know, some people, they're real talkers. And I can be a bit of a talker too, but in this instance, I became very private, but I bought exercise books and pens, and I began to journal. As I got stronger and stronger, I began to journal my journey all the way through, and that's how I began to express it for me. I had an ocean of words that were trying to come out of me in an effort to heal the pain.
And you had people to talk to?
Yeah, not many. I think in the time of grief, you've got to be very careful who you invite around. Number one, they have to buy in. You know, that I call it the Pentecostal backslap. There are lots of people that come up to you in a time of grief. They slap you on the back and say, praying for you. You know they're not. But they don't know what else to do. That's their way of trying to reach out to you. But there are some people that God will raise up to emotionally invest into you and give you the opportunity to emotionally invest in them. And these are the people that will listen, sometimes for long periods of time, without judgment, no matter how much silly stuff comes out of your mouth. And you can guarantee that your perspective on life and God at different times during grief will be a little bit strange. But these people will be the ones that will allow you the freedom to talk. I only had one or two really close people, and the closest of those listened and listened and listened. I cannot remember more than one piece of advice he gave me in 2 years. He just listened and encouraged, listened and encouraged, listened and encouraged.
I find this very encouraging because I would have no idea what to say to somebody who's going through grief, who lost a loved one, but I can listen. That I can do.
Well, you'd be terrific at it. The time you run into problem is when you say, well, it's been 6 months now, you should have closure.
Yeah, you kind of should get over this.
Yeah, or when I experience grief, this is what I have, as if you now have to follow the pattern that they had.
Yeah.
You know, they're people that may have experienced grief but don't know how to talk to somebody who is experiencing grief at the moment. In my very early stages of grief, I was listening to a wonderful man of God called Danny Guglielmucci. He talked about the four guys that carried their friend up on the roof on a stretcher and broke open the roof and lowered him into the presence of Jesus. And he made this point. He said, 4 out of 5 times in life, we're called to carry somebody else's stretcher. 1 out of 5 times, we're meant to be on the stretcher. And my takeaway from that was that when it's time for you to get on the stretcher, make sure you do. Give yourself permission to get on the stretcher. So following that must have been for about 3 or 4 years, I did, and people were happy to help me. They realized I was still in grief. They were happy to listen again and engage in the conversation. I'm sure in the early days, we could have started talking about refrigerators and ended up on grief. Wouldn't matter what you were talking about. But one day, a friend, a really good friend, said to me, do you realize every time you talk about anything, the conversation always goes to grief and the death of your wife? And he said, how long do you intend to keep this up? That jarred like I cannot tell you how much. It's like he was disrespecting the memory of my wife, and how dare he? And even though I got as angry as spitting chips, I went back to God and I said, what's going on here? And without a doubt, the Lord, through a number of things, showed me that it was time to get off the stretcher. You can't stay there forever. And so painfully, one leg after the other, I got off the stretcher and committed to move forwards into my new normal. So there is a time to get on, there's a time to get off, and somewhere in the middle you've got these wonderful people that God raises up just to walk with you and encourage you while you're going through it.
Our guest today is once again David Schaefer. He's the author of the book Grieve Upwards, One Man's Journey Through the Valley. We're going to hear more of his story and hear more of the lessons he's learned about dealing with grief when we return right here on Real Faith.
The Word for Today is Australia's most widely read daily devotional, designed to give you practical teaching to keep you focused on your relationship with Jesus. Read it online or subscribe to the free printed edition at thewordfortoday.com.au.
You're listening to Real Faith, conversations with real people about how God works in their lives. If you want to know more about integrating faith into your life, our website is realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Just go to the website and you'll find helpful articles about the impact faith can have on your life. And you can listen to past programs about the impact faith has had on others. Once again, that's realfaith.org.au.
Welcome back. I'm Eric Scadabo, and our guest today is once again David Schaefer. He's the author of the book, Grieve Upwards, One Man's Journey Through the Valley. Next, we're going to hear more of his experiences going through the valleys of life, and also we'll hear some of the lessons he's learned along the way. Now, unfortunately, you learned all these things about going through grief, and then, eventually, you went through another significant loss in your life.
Yes, I did. In 2013, well, it was 2011, my daughter, who'd been born with Alagille syndrome, had to have a liver transplant. In 2013, she passed away. She'd become the face of organ transplants on the RPA program, and she went, at Easter time in 2013, she went into hospital for what we thought was just a normal clean up of another infection, because, you know, I mean, if you've got somebody else's organ in your body, your immune system is lowered in order not to reject the liver that's not yours. But she was sent home only to get worse. She went back into hospital. She never came out. She was on life support, and we got to the very end of that experience. Maybe a day or so out, we realized that she wasn't going to live. Interestingly, by this time, I'd been through so many seasons of grief. And, you know, the closer you come to death, the less fear you have of it. And if you're a Christian, the more reality of eternity and heaven you have. And even though this was my precious, precious girl, I had a strength that carried my whole family and everybody that came into the intensive care section of RPA, I was able to carry them through that. I was able to encourage them. I was able to mobilize a prayer army all around the world. I didn't want my daughter to die any more than I wanted my first wife to die. But sometimes you got to go through them, not around them. And this was another one of those experiences. And so there we were. The doctors finally came to us, to her then husband. She'd been married for 15 months.
Tell us about that, if we could just kind of go on a sidetrack here. She had this illness. She was born with this illness, and she never expected to get married. Is that right?
She never expected to get married, and I never expected her to get married either. When I think about it, it was a wonderful hope, but it wasn't a reality that we entertained.
Did she have a life expectancy of over 30 years? Or
she was told that after the liver transplant, the average time people survive is about 20 years. So that meant longer for some, shorter for others. And so here's Belinda, married to the most beautiful young man, who we're still in such a close relationship. And even though he's remarried now, I love him as if he were my own son, and there's a great connection. But so there we are, Rowan, her husband, and me, her father. And the staff came to us and said, we think there's no hope. We think we've got to unhook her from the life support machines. And they said, are you ready for this? And of course, you're never ready for that, but you have to be. You don't have a choice. So I asked Rowan for permission if I could just have a moment with my girl. And I went into the room alone. And years before, when Belinda was sick, we used to have to not wake her up so much, but go in when she was asleep and shovel this stuff called cholestyramine into her, and a little mouth had come open and she'd eat this gluggy stuff to help her digest food because the liver wasn't working properly. And oftentimes I'd sit on the edge of a bed and I would start to, after I'd fed her this stuff, I'd start to declare things prophetically. I'd say, you've got a voice for this generation. God's going to raise you up. You've got a great call on your life. And I'd feel such a flow of prophetic unction, or whatever you might call it at that time. And she told me it some time after that. In fact, she said at her speech at a wedding, Dad, you thought I was asleep when you were saying all that, but I would always wake up to hear what you would prophesy over my life. And I still look back and think probably the best prophecies I ever gave anybody in my whole life. So when I sat down on a bed that day in RPA, and I sat there, and for the last time I was able to prophesy. And I said, Belinda, you're just about to slip out of your body and slip into the presence of Jesus. You know, like a like a dad, I said, this isn't going to hurt. I said, you're about to meet your mum. I apologise for not being the best dad that ever lived, you know, because we clash sometimes. Mm. I said, I'm so sorry. I wish I'd been a better dad. I'm not quite sure, but those are the things I can remember. But I just had one moment, and how blessed am I that I had the opportunity to usher my own child from mortality into immortality, from life, not into death, but through death into eternal life. I must be the richest and the most blessed father that ever lived, I think, to be able to go through something like that.
And then Rowan came in?
Yes. Yeah, my little experience, as rich as it was finished. And then Rowan came in, and it was about 20 minutes later that we and myself and the rest of the family came in, and Rowan was holding her in his arms, and he just looked up and tears running down his cheeks, I remember it, and just nodded with this smile, the sad smile on his face, and as if to say, she's gone. And there it was. But you know something? Something's only lost when you don't know where it is. Mm. We know where Belinda is.
Yep. Wow. So here you are going through a second major loss, but this time you were a bit more prepared.
So much more prepared. I mean, I'd been prepared for the first loss of my wife by walking with God for so many years. Mm. Now I had that, plus these extra years I'd walked with God, plus the experiences of other griefs that had helped me lose the fear of loss, helped me get life and heaven and eternity into perspective.
In our final remaining moments, what advice would you give people who are listening and hear what you've gone through and maybe are going through or about to go through a significant loss? What advice would you give them to prepare themselves?
If I could start with a word of encouragement, the cross of Jesus proves that something very good can come from something very bad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Advice, be consistent in your walk with God. Be consistent in reading the Bible and pausing and getting the gold out of it so that it's not information, it's revelation. Be consistent in your prayer life. Go into the presence of God. Don't just talk through a closed door. Go into the presence of God and talk with him as a friend, like Moses did, as a friend talks to a friend. Be intentional about grieving. It is going to happen. I guess I joke a little bit about it, but, you know, either you're the reason why somebody else is grieving or they're the reason why you are. If they're the reason why you are, be intentional. Face it. It's real. It is happening, and there's a way through it. Grief is not our enemy. Grief is our friend. It's something that God gave us in order to take us from a place of deep crisis and deep tragedy through to a place of great health again, where one day you can say, I don't know how this happened, but I think I'm one of the happiest people I know, despite that.
They say that if you break your leg and it heals, it actually heals stronger. And I guess you could say the same thing about grief, that if you go through it and process it in a healthy way, that you can come back stronger than ever before. And it sounds like that's what you're saying.
Yes, it is what I'm saying.
And stronger in your relationship with the Lord than ever before?
Absolutely. And stronger in relationship with people. If I can add to the analogy, if you have a broken leg, you won't sit at home and wait for it to heal because you know it'll heal badly.
Hmm.
You take it to somebody who can heal broken legs.
So where do you go if you need to heal a broken heart?
We have just the most amazing Christians who are psychologists, who are counselors, who are mentors, who are coaches, people like I hope I'm one of these people who've had a huge amount of experience and been trained and developed as a coach. And to give a person a safe place, a transparent place, a place full of confidentiality where they can empty their inner thoughts and where the person can help them go at their pace and move at their pace through to places of greater and greater health along their healing journey. That's all part of being intentional. Mm-hmm. Doing a course with somebody, that's reading the right books. Read Grieve Upward. Start there.
Oh, I kind of thought you might recommend that one. But yet you've earned it. You've gone through. You've had the experiences, and it's helped you. Yeah. And now you can turn around and help others.
Yeah.
David Schaefer, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
My very great pleasure.
Our guest today, once again, has been David Schaefer. He's the author of the book, Grieve Upwards, One Man's Journey Through the Valley. And to find out more about that book and more about David Schaefer in general, and if you want to contact him, his website is davidschaefer.com.au. That's davidschaefer.com.au.
You've been listening to Real Faith, and if you have any questions or comments, you can send us a message through our website, realfaith.org.au. That's realfaith.org.au. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join us again next time for more conversations about God working in the lives of people who put their faith and trust in Him. That's real people, real life, and real faith.
This program is a production of Vision Christian Media. To find out more about us, see vision.org.au.